Keep It is brought to you by Armra Colostrum. In a world that's constantly changing, your health shouldn't be up for debate. From the latest wellness trends to the chaos of modern culture, we're always questioning what's real and what's just noise. But one thing is certain. Your body wasn't designed for the nonstop stress, processed foods, and environmental toxins of today's world. Armra Colostrum is nature's original superfood, packed with over 400 bioactive nutrients that fortify gut health, strengthen immunity, revitalize hair growth, and fuel performance at the cellular level. Because no matter where you stand on the latest hot topic, feeling your best is never up for discussion. We've worked out a special offer for our audience. Receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/keepit or enter keep it to get 15% off your first order. That's tryarmra.com/keepit.
And we are back for an all new episode of Keep It. And I'm back. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel. And where the hell were you? That is simply too long to be on Fire Island.
Okay, I want to do some warning right now to people out there, particularly our community. There is a stomach bug going around.
Get out.
Yes, listen, several friends have had it. One friend is being tested for E. coli.
Ooh,
which
vintage.
Is crazy.
Yeah.
But from Monday until Thursday morning, when I basically was airlifted off the island. No, I was fine, but I got onto the ferry, got into
an infirmary,
a Cadillac,
okay,
and then zipped back to the city. I was immovable. I was in bed from Monday to Thursday morning. That's why I was still on the fucking island.
Oh my God. Well, what an amazing advertisement for Fire Island. Go there, have a good time, and then involuntarily lose a good 40 pounds.
Honestly, it was kind of great. In the aftermath, you know, not during. During it was a nightmare.
If you live through it, it's great. Yes. This is how I feel about today's Emmy nominations, because guess what? There were a couple of avenues under which I was lightly, I don't want to say optimistic, but, you know, put a little a prayer out there for myself. Didn't happen. I'm still an Emmy nominee because of last year, but I'm not one this year. So everybody, you know, awards mean more to me than people. So just know that I'm upset and you should be thinking of me.
That's sad, but at least I know that I've...
That's sad.
At least I know that I won't miss your running bit of... Hi, I'm Emmy nominee Louis Fertel.
And by the way, why did I stop that? It's still true, girl. Why am I not still shoving that in your face? You're right. But
you should be.
I know. You would be. Come on.
Yeah. We were in a show that won an Emmy.
What was that?
Remember Keke Palmer's Turns Up with the Taylors?
That won something?
Yes, it won an Emmy.
I mean, it was a Quibi show?
No, it was a Facebook show.
Oh, okay. I forgot that that existed. I know Catherine Zeta-Jones did that one drug show that was a Facebook show. Then I thought that became illegal.
Yeah, so we played ourselves in that. That's so crazy.
No, Keke said the words Ira and Lewis. It was shocking.
Yeah, I'm going to go find that clip because that's the only time she's going to say our names.
Yeah, she's like, peace out. Enjoy the 2010s where you belong. Yes, looking at these nominations, lots of things that get nominated every year that aren't that provocative. But I want to shout out an actress I love this year, Catherine Linaza on The Pit, who plays kind of the experienced doctor who's educating the new interns, and Noah Wiley's kind of main confidant on the show. But something I love about this woman, other than her performance, is great. Her series of three marriages, one of my favorites in Hollywood history. Currently, she is married to Grant Sho, whom you know from Melrose Place.
Oh, please.
But her two husbands before that, French Stewart of Third Rock from the Sun. And before that, Dennis Hopper.
Wow.
That is a triad.
She's carrying.
Yes. Imagine being married to Dennis Hopper. That must be terrifying.
That is also three wildly different men.
They have nothing in common. Her type is, can you believe it?
Which also, do you recall that Andrew Hsu was involved in that newscaster affair story?
Wait, the old one? Who is it? Jessica Savage or something?
Recently, like it was the black guy and his co-worker.
Yes. They were amazing. Yes.
Yeah, because she was married to Andrew Hsu.
Right. Yes. I forget to think about Andrew Hsu, and I'm thinking about Elizabeth all the time.
I was actually thinking about Elizabeth Hsu recently. I watched Raging Bull for the first time.
Oh, yes, with Kathy Moriarty. Great nomination.
Yes. And so I was looking up Kathy Moriarty, and I was like, wait, I know this diva. And I was like, wait, that's the diva from Soap Dish.
Yes.
Obviously. You
know, the most outdated role, amazing performance. Yes.
Right. She's so good. And then I was realizing, wait, everybody in Soap Dish at the time was like a heavy hitter.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, Elizabeth Shue's in this movie, and she's also a nominee.
And I always say about that movie, Whoopi was hot in it.
Yeah, she's sexy in it. Now, Elizabeth Shue's nomination was 4 years after Soap Dish for Leaving Las Vegas, but everybody in there was like doing it.
Yeah. Oh, no, you knew everybody in that movie. And Sally was, of course, sensational. Okay.
Looking at these Emmy noms, there are some shocks.
Yeah.
First of all, Sharon Horgan for Bad Sisters.
We love her. I love
that show.
Yeah. Also, good show, good cast. Also, Sharon Horgan's just a veteran now. She was a catastrophe. She just has done a whole bunch of things. Divorce with Sarah Jessica Parker, she was a part of. But this is her best show.
Let's not bring that show up.
I know. Really tried.
Maybe it's better in light of And Just Like That.
Well, I mean, most things are better. Like the Great Depression is better in light of Just Like That. first Emmy nom this year for Kristen Bell, which is pretty rad. Another showbiz veteran. Probably her best role was Veronica Mars, but this show is eminently watchable. And I have to support the career of Jackie Tone, who is just a weirdo person for real.
Yeah, she did a very weird episode of Keep It once, yes, where she revealed her relationship with our bi king, Jason Mraz.
Yes. Basically the preeminent bisexual, now that you mention it. If I had to rank them all. It's like how asexual, it's only Paula Poundstone. Who's the other reigning asexual in Hollywood?
Yeah, where has Jason Mraz been? We really are erasing them.
He is hidden under a hat somewhere with his little ukulele, looking like Spike from the Peanuts comic.
I also see under Outstanding Drama Series, Andor is nominated. And I promise, listeners, I'm going to start watching. Okay? Like, people keep telling me to watch Andor. They keep saying that basically what happened with Andor is sort of what James Gunn has said his idea for the DCU is. It's not everything has to be the same. You know, it's sort of like you just take the idea that this is the Star Wars, but then you make whatever the fuck you want. And so I hear that it's sort of like in the Star Wars universe, but it's really good and it's not just a mess. So, I'm going to watch that. I mean, I won't be here to talk about it, but I'm going to watch it.
I'm so excited that the Star Wars universe is expanding. I keep thinking it's going to be too small. It's like a fucking airport at this point. Jesus Christ.
Well, wars keep happening, Lewis.
That's right. So, oh, sorry. It's very hot button. Yes. Or hot, whatever. Hot topic. On the nose. I don't know what it is. I said last week when you weren't here and Kyle Buchanan was that Diego Luna is dating Oscar nominee Marina de Tavira. And they're kind of my favorite couple right now.
Okay. By the way, fun episode.
Thank you. No, Kyle brings it. And he's also got that low Ira Dulcet thing who, you know, coming in on like somebody who is doing radio and Do the Right Thing, that kind of voice.
I think I come in with a little Lynn Thigpen and the Warriors vibe, but yes.
Ooh, I love Lynn Thigpen. Gone too soon, Lynn Thigpen.
Yeah. I still think that your vendetta against The Wolf of Wall Street has to be examined.
Well, I would love to know what people love about it other than it's people screaming at each other and not in a cool Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf way.
You just have to do lines while watching it.
Oh, I see. My lack of a substance abuse problem is preventing me from understanding the joys of this film.
I was also very happy about Slow Horses being nominated for drama series.
That I can be happy for Gary Oldman, even after what he did to Leslie Manville. Says something about his acting ability. Okay. One problem I do have, I'm sorry, the acting on White Lotus is a bit overrepresented. Like, okay, I can support Carrie Coon, but like, did we need Amy Lou Wood to get an Emmy nomination for that? I don't know. I mean, like, she was sort of memorable, I guess, but we're talking about Patricia Arquette on Severance. Patricia Arquette wipes the floor with those performances.
I mean, Patricia Arquette probably just, like, wipes the floors in general. I feel like she probably would moonlight as the cleaning lady on set, too, just, like, to be helpful.
Right. You're right. She's like, yeah, whatever you need me for. Sure. Yeah.
I think that the Bear is in for some trouble.
Right. They've already had their day. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. And they're nominated for Outstanding Comedy Series, but people are coming for the Bear. Lately. Like, also, it doesn't help that apparently the show isn't good this season.
Right.
I don't watch it famously.
I saw a season of it, and I just feel like I saw all I need to see. I just don't have... I don't have... That's enough. I felt like I don't have anything else to learn from that kind of contentious restaurant relationship, personally. Also, Chloe Sevigny nominated for an Emmy for Monsters, the Lyle and Eric Menendez story. I want to shout out Cooper Koch, too, also nominated. Chloe Sevigny, I always say, like, sometimes celebrities are more important as interviewees than as actors. And I kind of thought she was just that. But you know what? She's got the Oscar nomination, and now she's got the Emmy nomination. So she's proving me wrong.
Maybe she's slowly working towards the EGOT.
Okay. You think she's going to, like, in her late 70s, she's really going to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's really, like, turning the beat around.
Yeah. She has to give, like, three more sort of board performances in Whit Stillman movies before she will get to that, but she will get to it.
Now, speaking of our older actors, Harrison Ford got his first ever Emmy nomination for Shrinking.
Wow, that's so crazy. Another person who is always around and you forget that we don't award him things. Do you remember when Bernie Taupin won an Oscar for co-writing that song from Rocket Man with Elton John and he had never won a Grammy before? That was his first ever EGOT award. Like, some people just slip through the cracks entirely when it comes to awards.
And he has a, what was his Oscar nom?
Witness.
Harrison's. Witness. Okay, yeah. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, 1985.
And he's certainly been great since. It's also like, he's one of those people too where you look at his filmography, you're sort of like, what would he have been nominated for though?
Right, exactly. Because none of it's
maybe
really prestige.
Girl.
Yeah. Or maybe the movie Presumed Innocent, which the limited series version here has a number of nominations, including Ruth Negga.
What'd you call me?
I wanted you to get it one more time. I don't know how well she was going to come up. Or like a volleyball team, Set and Spike.
Also, Kathy Bates became the oldest Emmy nominee for Best Drama Actress.
And she's doing better than ever. People apparently love that show. It would be weird if I spent any time on that show, but I believe it exists and I support Kathy Bates. I just watched About Schmidt for the first time and she is rowdy in it. Good nomination.
Oh, yeah. Kathy's my girl. I watch Matlock. I'm a Matlock head.
I am
Matlocked in.
I feel like you will turn on network television from time to time just to check in because you're a little bit of you miss the NBC Thursday night thrills of the 90s.
Girl, I don't just miss the NBC Thursday nights. I miss the ABC Thursday nights. I was recently watching clips from Revenge and talking with a friend about how, where are the primetime soaps? Where is Revenge? Where is Desperate Housewives? Where is even like an Ugly Betty or like even like a fucking Lost?
Yeah.
You know, like where are the, I feel like we are at a loss of shows that you are watching week to week. Everyone's talking about it. There's a big cliffhanger between seasons, and then you're excited for the new one. Like, we're really sort of missing that in
yes.
the TV realm.
Also, speaking of Ugly Betty, the great Michael Urie was nominated for Shrinking. Also, love him. So venerable. You would want him in anything. He brings such good energy, such a good performer. And one last shout out, Megan Fahey for Sirens nominated also. And she's up against Cate Blanchett in Disclaimer, Rashida Jones in Black Mirror, Kristen Milioti in The Penguin, and Michelle Williams in Dying for Sex. I do think Kristen's going to take that, but that's probably my favorite category of all of them.
Well, it's the only good show.
Well, yeah, Cate really pissed me off with that one.
Sirens. Let me put in my earplugs.
Dying for Sex, I still think Michelle Williams should have maybe been a more comic performer, like a Phoebe Waller-Bridge or something. But anyway.
I'm dying up here for sex.
Up for sex. Remember that show? Apple TV Plus had an amazing year. Severance and The Studio are two of the top nominees in those categories. And Adam Scott's nominated for Severance. And I think he's still one of my all-time favorite Keep It guests. When somebody likes REM that hard, I can only stand.
Yeah. I love The Studio.
Me too. Oh, I love, namely the second episode where it's all in one shot.
The Sarah Polley episode.
Yeah, and Sarah Polley's so good at it. Oh my God, she plays that so exactly right. Greta Lee, fabulous.
Let me tell you, the women weren't talking that day. It was Seth Rogen.
Yes, precisely. That's the sequel.
And Severance is still a show that exists.
Right. I guess the thing is people like to be in dystopias. I disagree. I want life to be good. I can't explain it.
You know what topias I like? Fruitopia.
How about Dinotopia, motherfucker? Yes. How about Mr. Eric Von Detten? Now we're talking awardsy.
Okay, now you're being Topia Tervesy.
Ooh, Gilbert and Sullivan? Yeah. The films of Mike Lee?
All right, well, we got a whole episode to get to.
True.
Superman came out and it was huge. So,
which kind of blows my mind a little bit, and I don't know why. Like, maybe it's just it's so disconnected from other IP. I was wondering if it was going to exist in a bubble, but yeah, I saw it too. Me, Lewis, I sat there for this movie.
So, we're going to talk about Superman and all the shit going on with that movie. Also, Lena Dunham dropped a new series called Too Much, and critics are calling it Not Enough.
Mm. Megan Stalter's in it, currently also of Hacks, but mainly of the internet. And whenever people move from the internet to the small screen, I say, are we sure?
Yeah. A smaller screen to a bigger screen, though.
That's true. Screens are actually lots of different sizes now. We can't be calling things the silver screen and the small screen. It just doesn't make sense.
Mm. It wasn't the screens that got smaller.
Gloria Swanson is our guest today.
She might as well be.
Yeah.
That paranoid bitch, because we have another paranoid bitch joining us this week. Ari Aster is here to talk about his new film, Eddington, and it literally feels like logging on to Facebook.
It is a living nightmare. And this is a man who calls himself a paranoiac bitch. I know. I see it. Let's scream at him.
So we have a lot to say to Ari Aster about this film, about his previous films, etc. And then also, Justin Bieber released a new album. So we're going to talk about that. We'll see how much swag Lewis has.
Oh, not this. Spoiler alert. Yeah. I'm worried for everybody. I'll save my swag for the Kesha album, which also came out this week and we'll discuss.
Yeah. So we will be right back with more Keep It.
Keep It is brought to you by OneSkin. You know you need to protect your skin from the sun, but what if you could protect it from things like collagen loss and inflammation? My skin could use all the help it needs, and even repair some of the damage you did when you were younger. The good news is that you can, something I learned from the scientists at OneSkin. Not only does their mineral SPF line protect your skin from UV damage, now they also work at the cellular level to help repair the sun damage from your teens and 20s. The face SPF is super lightweight, breathable, and comes in tinted or untinted. The body SPF is water resistant and helps prevent collagen loss. And the new lip SPF hydrates instantly and is scientifically proven to keep your lips healthy, bouncy, and firm. It's advanced sun care that performs like skincare. Let's talk about my lips for a second. You may have noticed they are non-existent. OneSkin helps them look like lips, which, you know, arguably they don't look like that. And also, they're so fulsome. They're luxurious. They're buxom. We can get into more sexual terminology, but this is an ad. Plus, I need all the SPF help I can get. I am in the L. Fanning community of whiteness. And if I'm outside for even 5 seconds, like darting from here to my car, I'm in danger. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking younger and acting younger for longer. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin with 15% off using code KEEPIT at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code KEEPIT. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
James Gunn's Superman flew into theaters this past weekend, giving superhero fans a glimpse into the new DCU and giving film fans a Bradley Cooper cameo for seemingly no reason at all. Critics are debating whether or not this movie has done enough to save the superhero genre, but if capes and Krypton aren't your thing, we're also going to chat about Lena Dunham's new Netflix series, Too Much, starring friend of the show, Meg Stalter. But starting with Superman, Lewis,
yes,
were you dripping in corn sweat?
Oh, God, I am right now. It's a medical issue.
He is so hot.
He is gorgeous. I mean, of course, I am a survivor of Ryan Murphy's Hollywood, so I am already very familiar with David Corn's sweat.
And The Politician.
Yes, which that had its moments. I enjoyed Gwyneth on that. Here's what I'll say about this movie. It kind of felt like seeing Spider-Man 1 at the time, which was It was all devoid of the turducken of IP that has become all these other movies. And so it felt relatively stressless to just enter this new world, even though we're deeply familiar with it and the characters within it. There's Superman. He has that relationship with Lois Lane and this newspaper, and he's still got the silly glasses, whatever. But there was a purity.
No origin.
Yes. It was just, and by the way, they just launch you kind of midway into a story too, which was a bit controversial. You're not at square one the way you are at the beginning of Spider-Man where he gets the bite and all that. But it was pleasant that way. I found myself looking forward to this movie because everybody in it is so kind of casually charming. I thought the best performance in it was Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane, who I believe is kind of in Courtney Cox drag in this movie. Did you keep thinking she was Courtney Cox?
She was giving Gale Weathers.
Yes. By the way,
just a little bit.
I think if Gale Weathers never happened, Courtney Cox should have been Lois Lane. Like, she's very that vibe. Like, I work at the paper, but I'm also willing to be charmed by a man, you know?
I really enjoyed her performance too. I think she's fucking great.
Yeah.
And I loved David, obviously. He just has this like Boy Scout thing to him. And like, he's like hot and manly too. It's very like, it's very much how like you were excited for Henry Cavill for being Superman. But this one feels more like he could be Superman.
Yeah. This guy, like the boyishness plus the sort of heartthrob. It's like if Elijah Wood became a superhero or something. Mm. You know, there's like an innocent quality, but then also, yeah, a man, obviously. Corn sweat does sound like a Latin term for ab sweat.
I also like that Superman didn't feel like a god in this film. Like, he got beat up a lot.
Yeah. And actually, I would almost say a fault of the movie is we didn't get enough scenes where Superman got to charm us because there were so many scenes of him down bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like in the Sex and the City movie where like Carrie's in a deep depression, actually, 75% of the time.
Or in Just Like That.
100%. Yeah.
Well, that's us, actually.
Yeah.
Also, my man, Nicholas Hoult.
He is gorgeous in this movie.
And he's so funny.
Yes. Also, his vibe is Lex Luthor in this movie. First of all, he's full bald, so he looks exactly like the guy from the band Live, Ed Kowalczyk. But also, he's styled so Future Sex Love Sounds, which something about that, like being bitter that era of fashion is over, I think would propel a Lex Luthor of today. So it felt very smart.
Yeah, I enjoy Nicholas Hoult in most things, to be honest. I actually don't think there's anything I dislike him in. He's always fun, like even in The Menu. Like he's so good at that character. Even the movie itself is a little messy.
That movie made me not want to go to a restaurant ever again. Even though I did think he was good in it, I thought Rafe was good in it, and I thought the amazing Janet McTeer was great in it.
Yeah, I know who you didn't say was good in it.
Okay.
We'll take that off the menu.
I will say, though, I do think I wish Lex Luthor got more to do. I didn't think he got a lot of opportunity to be a villain in a interesting new way or like be really twisted. I did think
there was a lot of plot going on, to be honest. Like after a certain point, we didn't get a lot of the moments of just like these two baddies going head to head, you know, which is what you always get from Lex and Superman. And I get they wanted to do something a little bit different, but I love their confrontation at the end, you know, where he's yelling about why he hates Superman, etc. And it's all there. It's just that there was a lot going on in the movie. Obviously, there's the addition of the Justice Gang, who will become the Justice League of America eventually. And I thought it was fun adding these extra characters in, but maybe a little bit too much of them at times. Although Mr. Terrific was fantastic.
They felt like they kind of interrupted the movie a little bit too often. I wish they had been introduced or ingratiated into the film a little more subtly, because they weren't as charming as Superman, Lois, and Lex Luthor. I wish we had just gotten a bit more of that story.
I like Nathan Fillion, but like the joke about the haircut was funny, but then we had to keep looking at the haircut.
Right. It was tough. and unchanging. Yes. And also there was a side character, this like kind of bimbo girlfriend of Lex Luthor named Eve. And I thought that didn't pop off at all.
Lauren Sanchez Bezos?
That's right. She was very Topanga looking to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Danielle Fishel.
Yeah. She plays an integral part in the film plot-wise, but doesn't really do anything else character-wise, which was unfortunate. Also, the same can be said for Jimmy Olsen.
True. Also,
but I love that actor.
The way she takes selfies, she actually belongs in the movie Eddington. Like one of those damning characters of today who is, you know, who we all raise an eyebrow at.
Overall, I would say I really enjoyed Superman. And I also find it so funny that Fox News and their ilk has come after the film for its immigration depictions. And, you know, it's not unsurprising, because back in the 40s, people were upset that Superman was beating up Nazis and Hitler before the U.S. entered World War II, mind you.
Right. Because we could have gone either way. You know what I mean? We weren't sure.
So it's just, you know, a lot of the same history repeating itself shit, where like the people on Fox News, Kellyanne Conway, for instance, complaining about Superman, sound like people complaining about Superman in the 40s. Like, it's almost like they're doing a bit.
Right. And that's kind of the thing with her, too. It always feels like she specifically is doing a bit, too. But
they're like, oh, we got to hate Superman today. Like,
these themes are definitely underlined in the movie, but truly, it is pretty funny that any movie that might even have an element of kindness as like a moral backbone, these people take as like an affront to them. I mean, it's funny. I mean, it's sad for them and the world, and we're all fucked, but it's also additionally, on an ironic level, so stupid.
I will say, though, that the villain in the movie was definitely Netanyahu.
Quite. Yes.
Oh, I was like, oh, they were like, let's throw all this. I think they actually threw all the immigration stuff to the forefront of the conversation so that they could backdoor in the Palestine stuff.
Right. No, I think you're definitely right. I want to say also about Lex Luthor. He's literally calling shots in this movie. Like, he has a headset and is yelling things like L2, L3. And he reminded me of Ed Harris in The Truman Show. And that is such a funny supervillain take. Just to be, I'm in a booth and I'm like basically the stage manager of this apocalypse.
Yeah. Truman Show, by the way, a much more chic movie than you would remember.
Yeah. That's a movie where everybody loves the concept because everybody has that idea about themselves. Like, am I in a simulation, etc. But there are things in that movie that are really well realized, namely near the end. I think when the illusion starts to fall apart at the beginning, it feels a little stupid. Like, why are they so sloppy? It makes no sense.
Yeah. Another thing I really enjoyed about the movie was Crypto, the dog.
Yes, though he is quite CGI. It felt like Clifford the Big Red Dog running onto screen in a way.
I miss him. Where's he been?
I know. Reading, I guess. That's his whole thing, right? I'm in a book, but I'm a dog and I can read.
Very meta.
Yeah. Because he's already in the book. Let me read you.
He's not reading that book, though.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. He probably reads like Colleen Hoover. No.
Clifford enjoying a good, like The Summer I Turned Pretty or something. He's like, I love this.
Overall, I would say that this was a nice reintroduction to the DC universe, which has sort of been a mess. Not that Marvel hasn't been a mess lately, too. But Fantastic Four seems like it's going to be good. Thunderbolts was enjoyable. So I feel like maybe these superhero movies are getting back to being fun again, instead of being about, here's 9,000 other films that you have to watch to be able to understand this.
Yeah. Well, Vanessa Kirby's in that Fantastic Four film, so I will be seeing that. I also want to say about Superman, the flirtations were so good. The relationship between him and Lois Lane, and there was an actual kind of flirty dynamic that, by the way, is something that most James Bond movies are lacking now. The last time we got something really good in that vein, I feel like, was Casino Royale with Daniel Craig and Eva Green. But their dynamic was so fun. And which reminds me, the last time I cared about Superman was the show Lois and Clark, which was so good. I'm so sorry Lois and Clark was so good. Terry Hatcher was fabulous on that show.
Miss Terry Hatcher. Of course.
Yes, the great Terry Hatcher of Desperate Housewives, which of course we had mentioned earlier.
By the way, I guess it's one of the anniversaries, or people are talking about it more, that Vanity Fair profile of the cast of Desperate Housewives from season one. If you have not reread that in a while, please go back and reread it, because it is one of the wildest things to ever happen in pop culture. You can literally see the divisions on set and like see who hates each other and who doesn't from this profile.
Oh my God. Well, that's funny because I just ran across an interview with Catherine Justin recently talking about Nicolette Sheridan, how she'd show up late to work. And she just said, she says flatly, like, not affected, not being on anybody's team. She's like, yeah, so she was bad. So funny. But we're being too much right now. Like the show Too Much, starring Megan Stalter on Netflix. Created by Lena Dunham. We're so happy to have her back. Lots of interesting, inspired cameos so far on this show. Jessica Alba was on the first episode. Will Sharp, whom we loved in The White Lotus, and Real Pain, is back here. What did you think of the show and what you've seen? I've only seen two episodes so far.
I will say that they've hidden how hot Will Sharp is on the show.
Yeah.
He's giving indie rocker.
Quite.
Which is, yeah. And I'm like, okay. Well, he's not really freezing my monkey. You know, I don't really want to go to the Arctic with him. But, he's fine. That is to say that the show is fine
to me so far. Pretty good. It's like, first of all, I think you kind of know what to expect out of a Megan Stalter performance. She delivers one specific kind of total mess girl who has like a weird optimism about her, but that optimism is also just as tragic. And she's doing that. But I was surprised that as the episode wore on, you got more genuine acting moments from her too. Like, she sort of settled away from shtick. And I feel like her work on Hacks on HBO is like, they basically just want her to recreate what she does online, which is fine. But like, I don't know, it's not really dynamic in a TV performance. So to see her get to expand her chops here has been quite gratifying.
Yeah, I am really enjoying her about four episodes into the series, so I'm about halfway there. But the series itself is so interesting to me because, one, I'm happy to have Lena Dunham back. I love her voice. I love Girls, obviously. But the show feels so Netflix. And I get that it's on Netflix, but does everything on Netflix have to look the same?
Yeah, you're right. There's like a resting sort of nimbus cloud over this show that makes it like that kind of faux prestige-y feel, or that feel that like feels like it's compensating for a lack of actual written material on screen. Even though I think it's like quite funny. I don't know that I'm laughing out loud at what's funny on this show. That's not really the point of it. It's too experiential, too slice of life to be like that. But
yeah, I feel like the lighting, you know, particularly when you see Felix and his flatmates, for instance, you know, it feels very Netflixy there. And it's the question is Lena Dunham making a Netflix show, or is she like bursting out of the Netflix formula, etc.? It's just, I don't know, she had such a distinctive voice and vision on HBO. And what I love about HBO is that like shows can look wildly different.
Yeah.
You know, True Blood didn't look like Girls, didn't look like Sex and the City, didn't look like Arliss. Thank God.
Which we're always talking about. Yes.
Remember when that used to be like a punchline for anything? Just referencing Arliss.
Yeah. I guess it is a funny comedy word. Like the syllable it ends on is funny, but like no disrespect to the great Robert Wall.
But yeah, it just feels like it could be any other Netflix show, which I guess works for Netflix because those shows are designed for you to keep watching.
Right.
You know, when you fall asleep, you wake back up like something's playing.
But you're right. I probably won't be sticking with it because I'm too busy watching the new season of Big Brother.
Thank God. Okay, let's talk about real TV.
Yes. Can we talk about actual drama? even though the theme of this season, by the way, which is like a mysterious hotel, it's called Hotel Mystere.
Hotel Mystere.
Girl, this is from 2004. That is a Sims expansion pack.
Also, Julie Chen saying, Hotel Mystere.
Right, she's not sure what the word is. She's not sure. And they're not going to tell her. They're like, let God tell her, since they're in an alliance.
The concept for this season is it's a mystery, and there's a mastermind who's, you know, manipulating things in the house. Last year, it was like the AI person manipulating things in the house, and it got really old really fast.
Yeah.
But the mastermind at least seems more fun. I think that mystery element is them really trying to reheat the traitors' nachos, which sort of were Big Brother's nachos in the first place. But I like the idea of just the cast being fun and there not too much going on with twists and turns, etc. It's just, it seems like a very straightforward season. And then they also threw Rachel Riley in there from Big Brother 12 and winner of Big Brother 13. And let's just say that when Rachel Riley is not getting the most screen time in the second episode of the series, which aired on Sunday, then you know the cast is psycho.
That is probably true, yes. Because she is divisive in my own head. Like, yes. I support what she is able to do on this show, which is, in a sort of grating way, get what she wants. Like, it's weird that she can be so demonstratively grating, and yet it works for her in a way. Like, it draws you into her. I remember rooting for that woman, Portia, to beat her the last time she was on the show. What was wrong with me? Portia wasn't good either. But I'm interested to see how she tangles with a list of new cast members, because it's been so long since she's been on the show.
Well, Portia opened Pandora's box. And
right.
Because the producers were like, we don't want Rachel going home.
Yes, precisely.
I think that Rachel will play this season a little bit smarter, though, because she did do poorly on Traitors.
Right. I even forgot she was on it. That's sort of the benefit of that show. When somebody goes out early, it's just like, well, you're out early. Like, and it's not really a reflection one way or another on how you played. People are just randomly eliminated. So it's easy, at least for me, to forget.
Yeah. So I'm excited for this season of Big Brother. I think that, like, I'm already watching the feeds.
Oh, you're so, in. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I go all or nothing here. So actually, I'm going to go check in on the house guests right now. So we'll be right back with more Keep It. But before that, some quick housekeeping. The media might have gone quiet about Trump's reign of terror in Los Angeles, but Cricut is making more noise than ever with new merch items that speak out against ICE and the havoc it's wreaking in our communities. The Friends of Immigrants tee sends the message that you're standing up for your neighbors, and the Don't Poke the Bear California flag tee is perfect for those of us who love California and the immigrants who make it amazing. You can find both at Cricut.com/store. All right, when we're back, we're joined by Ari Aster.
Keep It is brought to you by Helix. You're aware by this point that I love my Helix mattress, but what do I dream about while I'm sleeping on my Helix mattress? I've had a recurring dream ever since I was a child, and I did not tell her this when she was a guest on the show, that Valerie Bertinelli was friends with my mom. I don't know where this began. I don't know why I thought this. I was so into the show One Day at a Time that I felt like I knew her. And then when I actually got to meet her when she was a guest on this show, it should have been creepier for her, but luckily no one briefed her on my dreamscape that involves her. Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. Now, everybody's unique, and everybody sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. So how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? Take the Helix sleep quiz and find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. My sleep quiz results are unchanged. There's nothing to update you on here. I am a midnight lux, and it feels sensational. I sleep on my side. The best part? Your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. Go to helixsleep.com/keepit for 27% off site-wide exclusive for listeners of Keep It. That's helixsleep.com/keepit for 27% off. This is a site-wide exclusive for listeners of Keep It. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout so they know we sent you. helixsleep.com/keepit.
We are so excited to bring on today's guest. He's one of the most prolific indie directors of our time. And as we already said in this episode, he does paranoia like nobody else. You know him as the auteur behind Midsommar, Hereditary, and Beau is Afraid. Today, he's here to talk about his latest project, Eddington, which hits theaters this weekend. Please welcome to Keep It, Ari Aster. And happy birthday, I've realized.
Thank you.
Your favorite activity, press. I'm sure this is exactly what you've long wanted for your birthday. Yes.
I asked for it.
I had the pleasure of seeing this film last night at the Alamo Drafthouse, and you chatted with Naomi Fry after it. Was that have you been around people watching the film yet?
I didn't sit in last night, but I've sat in with a couple audiences and gotten a sense of it.
And how is this, I guess, audience reaction compared to sitting in with any of your previous films?
I never have much objectivity. You know, I would say it's a film that's doing something different than my other films. And so the response is inevitably going to be different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But every time I sit in, it feels like it's playing more or less the way I intended.
I laughed immediately, with your Giovanni's Room joke.
So. Oh, my God. The girl dancing to the Giovanni's Room. There's an Instagram reel that appears where somebody, like, when you finish Giovanni's Room. Anyway, it's very funny.
Good. I'm glad.
But I read that you started writing this, like, at the beginning of the pandemic. And I have to ask you, like, what propelled you to even finish it? Because the news was already frustrating enough at that time, and it's well incorporated into this movie. It's a very of-that-moment movie. But it's just compounded with all these layers of paranoia and infighting and misinformation and anti-mask sentiments, et cetera. Just like, how could you keep doing this is my question.
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to escape it. So you might as well grapple with it. I started writing this thing at the time that the film is set, early June 2020. And everything was feeling terrible. And I thought, I'm going to try to make sense of it, or at least pull back as far as I can and try to at least describe the structure of reality at the moment, which is that nobody can agree on, you know, what it is, on what's happening. And we're all kind of living in these different realities. We're all living on the internet, which is kind of been the case ever since we've been able to carry the internet on our person. We've been successfully divided. I don't think that's the innocent consequence of social media. I think social media is a tool that has been harnessed. We're kind of living out an experiment that is, you know, has clearly failed, but you know, the people at the levers don't seem very interested in slowing it down. In fact, it seems to only be accelerating. So anyway, these were all the things that were kind of, you know, on my mind when I started writing it and just wanting to get at the environment.
Mm-hmm. You started writing this in the beginning of the pandemic, and obviously now the movie is coming out and we're in 2025 now. Were there moments in the film and or ideas that you had that you were writing that then you were like, okay, because the internet moves so fast, because culture has moved so fast, because politics has moved so fast, you know, were there any big changes where you were like, well, this doesn't really work anymore? Or do you still feel that you have the nugget of what you started with?
Well, that's what helps about making a period piece, right? That I'm making a film that's basically happening over the course of a week. Mm-hmm. So if anything, those things don't stop being relevant. It just you almost want to incorporate more than you can because mm-hmm. things do change. But you know, I feel that we haven't really metabolized what happened in 2020 or how seismic COVID was. And one reason for that is that, you know, we're still kind of living through it. Like, you know, that was an inflection point and the consequences of it are still forming. And things are only kind of getting scarier and more dangerous. And the film is, it's a black comedy and, you know, I guess a satire. But I think the really insidious thing about this moment is that it is dangerous and it is catastrophic and it is disastrous. But at the same time, it's ridiculous and absurd and impossible to take seriously. And so that's the tone I'm trying to somehow strike and sustain in this film.
I hope this doesn't come off as scolding, but a part of me thinks, based on how purposely frustrating the characters in your movies are, going back to Hereditary, how fraught the situations are, how stressful the movies are, that you must have been bored by most movies growing up. Like, I can't even really picture you like sitting through a normal drama and thinking enough is going on or I'm feeling enough. So I guess my question is, who did you find yourself inspired by? Because I can't even put you in a sequence with, like, it's not really Hitchcockian. It's just, I'm interested who, like, you think back to the most.
Wow. I mean, if I really start to answer this in earnest, we're going to need like 3 hours.
Yeah.
But you just mentioned Hitchcock. He's huge for me.
Yeah.
Scorsese is big for me. Kubrick, Ingmar Bergman, Fellini, Shohei Imamura is a Japanese filmmaker who was working in the 60s and 70s. He was working all the way into the early 2000s, but he's somebody who made these movies that kind of played with high and low, you know, where it's like they're like high taste, very, very, you know, well-made, sophisticated films that were also kind of vulgar and obscene in certain ways that I find exciting. Buñuel is somebody who does the same thing.
You're a Bergman fan. Yes, I've seen you talk about his films so much.
I'm a big Bergman fan. Yeah, I think he's a great filmmaker and a great writer. He's such a great director that it's almost easy to forget that he is one of the great screenwriters. And I think that if he were a playwright, that he would be considered on the same level as, you know, somebody like Strindberg or Ibsen. But yeah, he's a very, very important filmmaker. Mm. Especially because his movies are so neurotic. And I relate to that. I
believe you're a neurotic. I have to say, watching the films. I have to say.
last night, you also talked a bit about, Naomi brought this up, I believe, but like JFK, you know, and the whole Oliver Stone oeuvre, you know, like because this is a film that's about paranoia and conspiracies and sort of mass hysteria. And I kept trying to think of other films beyond, you know, JFK or Nixon, you know, that are sort of about conspiracies. I mean, I love conspiracy movies, but I feel like I'm usually drawn towards thrillers, you know, like 3 Days of the Condor, you know, or like Blow Up or something like that. And finding a film like this, you know, you also likened it to a bit Nashville, Altman's. Yeah. And getting into the conspiracy mindset for this, is that a place that you found yourself dipping into in 2020, or was it something that has always sort of fascinated you from just watching films?
I've always loved conspiracy thrillers. You know, you mentioned Blow Up. I love Blow Out as well. I love...
Oh, yes, of course.
I love 3 Days of the Condor. Although I think that there's some very weird things about that film that make it interesting, but flawed. I love Parallax View.
Oh yeah, now we're getting real paranoid. Yes,
I could keep going. I think a very interesting film, also for all the ways that it doesn't work, but kind of works accidentally, would be Conspiracy Theory, the Richard Donner. That's a movie worth revisiting because it's insane. But yeah, I mean, I was talking last night about JFK because I find JFK to be a film that only becomes more interesting in retrospect, for the way that it taps into the fever and the mania of conspiracy thinking, which I think is something that's more relevant now than when the film was made. And, you know, the film has been widely dismissed and criticized for being like a rat king of, like, you know, different conspiracies that don't actually cohere. But that almost makes it even more useful to me. The fact that it's a film that kind of is like living on the momentum and kind of capturing the momentum of like this detail, which leads to this detail, which leads to this revelation, which leads to this epiphany, you know, and I think especially the way that the internet has intensified this and the way that conspiracy theories have been proliferating and have been pushed into the mainstream. It feels like when I watch JFK now, I think like, wow, this actually feels like the atmosphere of the country right now. And it's crazy, you know, and it's dangerous.
I don't know if you've ever seen Winter Kills, by the way, but it was screening in New York. Okay. Yeah. I forget which theater it was at. I don't think it was at the Metrograph, but it was somewhere last fall, and I went to see it in that, too, about the JFK conspiracy. It's just a crazy, insane black comedy. If our listeners haven't seen it, they should definitely watch it.
It's a very fun movie, and it does the thing that I love, that which is that it goes completely off the rails. It's an absolutely ridiculous, insane movie. Yeah.
You're also a fabulous director of performances, and there's one I wanted to single out in this movie. Of course, Joaquin Phoenix is back. He was in Beau Is Afraid. But my favorite performance in this movie was Austin Butler as this very charismatic, it can only be described as Justin Bieber-like man, who is there's just like a, he's kind of found religion, and there's like a real charisma to him, and he's paranoia spouting, just a very 2020 internet person. Where did the inspiration for this character come from? Because it feels very well drawn out, and he feels very much like he gets this character.
Yeah, well, he's sort of a lot of things personified. You know, I was thinking a lot about QAnon culture. I was thinking about just different charismatics that had gained like a large following, and you know, had maybe some extreme views. And yeah, like he was like, you know, meant to be like a Pied Piper figure. But I met Austin Butler, I would say about a year before making the film. I was having dinner with him and a couple other people. And I was talking to him and I was like, really, I was already a fan of his, but talking to him, I was really struck by how sincere he is in a way that's real. Like he's a really warm, sweet, funny, earnest guy. In a way that's not like repellent or like, you know, it's very inviting. And I found myself just kind of like sinking into his eyes. And I was like, and I just thought, this guy would be a great cult leader. Absolutely. Like this guy... This guy could be dangerous easily. And so after that dinner, I couldn't see anybody else in that role. And I was so happy that he accepted the part. Cause it, you know, it's a very important role and it comes right in the middle of the film. It's kind of central, but it's relatively small. And so I was thrilled that he accepted the part.
That was terrifying. It's compelling. It's like you want his own film, to be honest. I have to ask too, since you're such a fan of films, and Lewis brought up performances and, you know, people that you've directed beautifully, are there any actors that you love who are probably no longer with us, or maybe some who are actually, who you really just sort of like, you would love to direct them in something, or just performances you really love from someone who's maybe no longer with us, and you're like, wow, I wish I could get something like that out of them in one of my films.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so many people, you know. Peter Lorre is somebody I would have... I would love to work with.
Always hair raising. Yes.
Yeah. Those eyes are so great. So many people. I mean, so many of them will be obvious, you know, but Marlon Brando or Montgomery Clift, Robert Ryan, Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah, she could do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, she could do anything. Edward G. Robinson.
I just got this book because someone on the I think on the New Yorker's Instagram recommended it. There's like a 1,000-page Barbara Stanwyck biography that was written by Victoria Wilson, and I cannot wait to read it. It's only says 1907 to 1940.
Oh, that's not even half of it.
That's it. Like 1,000 pages of just that.
You didn't even get to Ball of Fire there. Goodness. Yeah,
yeah.
Holy cow! Yeah, she was the best. She was the best. I mean, yeah, there's so many people. Sterling Hayden. I'm getting lost now because there are just so many. And you know, there's so many people that are alive that I want to work with. I would love to work with Isabelle Huppert or, gosh, who else? I mean, so many. There are just so many amazing actors.
Terrifying performances. Oddly, very sweet, warm woman to talk to.
Yes.
Yeah, Huppert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've met her several times and we've kind of become friends, and I love her. She is wonderful. She's great.
My final question for you is, going back to Hereditary, we had Toni Collette on the show once, who was an awesome interviewee, but do you have any specific memories of her doing anything insane on screen that you maybe didn't anticipate as an acting moment that you either incorporated or didn't? Because who has seen that movie does not think back to that performance and cannot believe what she fucking did in that movie.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, I was blown away by a lot of what she was doing. She's a really, really impressive technical actor. Just like really amazing and amazing to watch. But I mean, I felt that way about Alex Wolff on that film too.
He was great in that movie. Mm-hmm.
I thought he did incredible things there. And, you know, I've been very lucky with the actors I've been able to work with. They're, you know, especially on Eddington. I mean, Emma Stone is so incredible. She's she's another person who, you know, she's playing a character that is sort of at a remove from us because we're with her husband who doesn't really understand her. So we only really get to see her from his point of view. And she's able to do so much at that distance from us, you know, with so much kept away. Like, we talked about her character being something of a ghost. And I really think she did that. I love Emma Stone, loved Austin, really loved working. I mean, Joaquin is just, you know, amazing. And I love working with him. And I think he's great in this film and so funny. And so I think it's such a complicated performance. Luke Grimes is great. Michael Ward is brilliant in the film. I love Michael Ward. And Dee Dee O'Connell, Clifton Collins Jr. It's a huge cast, and I was lucky to have all of them. They're all great.
Deirdre O'Connell, I want to say, kind of reminded me of, if you remember Black Klansman, there's an actress in that named Ashley Atkinson, where it's just like every time they open their mouth, you're like, woof, this is a new version of racist that I have not seen on the silver screen, and they are loud. Wow. Yeah.
She's so good. I loved her in Dana H. And so, like, what I love when a theater actor is just tears up in a film like this.
I saw Dana H too, and that's actually where I decided that I had to work with her.
Her and Patty, by the way, like, you've gotten great theater people in your films. Yeah. Yeah. We interviewed Patty right after Beau Is Afraid. Yeah. Nathan too.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. God, Parker Posey. But yeah, no, I loved working with Patty. She was great. Just to go back to Dana H, I will just say that's maybe the most amazing stage performance I've ever seen. For people who don't know what that play is, it is this recorded testimony given by this woman who went through a very, very horrible experience. And it lasts for about an hour and a half. And Dee Dee O'Connell just lip syncs to that recording seamlessly for an hour and a half and just taps into this woman, but it's not her voice. And I had never seen anything like it, but it was mesmerizing. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Memorable.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much for being here with us.
Well, thank you.
Honestly, your movies are so engrossing and weird and fun to watch. I watch Midsommar probably a bit too much.
Midsommar is like still an entire personality. Like if you love Midsommar, I know a lot about you. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's a very funny way of putting it. Great.
Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a fun conversation. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Ari Aster. Eddington hits theaters on July 18th. All right, when we're back, it's more Keep It.
Keep It is brought to you by Honeylove. What do I know about women's struggles with bras and shapewear? I'll tell you. When I was a child, there was an episode of Family Feud in the 90s when Richard Dawson came back about what the most uncomfortable thing about underwear is. And a bunch of adults were listing their answers and I was entranced. I said, is this what being an adult is like? Anyway, moving on. Those of you who watch us on YouTube know that I do not, in fact, have breasts, but our producer, Kennedy, tried out Honey Love's crossover bra and has been raving about it, so much so that it's borderline inappropriate. As she says verbatim, I don't even wear bras since I'm part of the bee sting hive. But Honey Love feels like two little clouds are giving me a supportive, sensual hug and doesn't ruin my hot girl fits. Graphic, Kennedy, graphic. Honey Love is an independent, female-founded brand, and their pièce de résistance is the new Cloud Embrace bra. It's a wireless t-shirt bra for people who love underwire, and it sold out in days, so yeah, it's pretty rad. Like the Cloud Embrace bra, all Honeylove bras are supportive and wire-free thanks to bonding technology that lifts without underwire. Honeylove also makes shapewear designed to move with you and not bunch up as you go about your day. I'm not kidding. In that Family Feud episode, number one was underwear bunches up. I've remembered this for 30 years. A true game changer for the shapewear is an opening in the panty area so that you don't have to get fully undressed every time you go to the restroom. Finally, treat yourself to the most advanced bras and shapewear on the market. Save 20% off Honeylove at honeylove.com/keepit. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off honeylove.com/keepit to find your perfect fit. After you purchase, they ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the new standard in bras and shapewear with Honeylove.
Pop music was booming last week with the release of Kesha's new album, Period, and the surprise drop of Justin Bieber's Swag. We're going to dive into both and discuss whether their new sounds are a joyride or a ride to nowhere. Let's start with Mr. Bieber.
Okay.
Swag. Who has it? Lewis. Are you swagging?
Oh, in my way. I mean, I wouldn't put it in the dictionary under swag, I have to say, with what I do. I have a little bit of a saunter about me. You know what I'm saying?
Svelte, white, and gay?
You think that's like an acronym for swag or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh my God, Svag, S-V-A-G. What if I'm that? He's a real swag. Let me say about this album. I kind of appreciate the overall feel of it. I feel like it gets a little bit repetitive. That said, he sounds great on it. I think the vocal sounds fabulous. And I love the song with, get ready, Sexy Red.
I knew you were about to come in standing your girl.
The First Lady of the United States, Sexy Red.
Your vote for the new Poet Laureate.
Yes, please. Fat, juicy, and elect her. Yes.
I actually really like the Sexy Red song, too. I feel like the album itself is very SZA-coded.
Yeah, it's moody. It just feels, yes.
Yeah. Mm. It's a dump of songs that he was working on. and was just ready to put out there, like she did with Lana recently, like the addition to SOS. And it makes sense because Carter Lang, one of the producers on this album, has worked on all of SZA's albums. Also Bieber worked with Lang and SZA on the Snooze acoustic remix. So it's that kind of vibe of releasing R&B music right now that everyone's sort of into. And Bieber is nothing if not up on trends, you know? It's also sort of like chicken or the egg with him, right? It's not clocking to you that I'm standing on business. Was that promo for an album that he was planning to release already? Mm. Or did that viral moment make him capitalize by releasing songs that he had already been working on? You can't really tell, but it's dominating the conversation right now online.
Right.
So congrats.
He also has a song called Devotion with Dijon on this album that I think is fabulous. I have to really emphasize some of the vocals on this album. He does, there's no other way to put it, Michael Jackson-y things on this.
Oh, he's singing.
Yeah, and
he's
it sounds it. Really, really good. And it's giving you kind of like moody, traumatized Michael Jackson. You know, we're talking mid-90s when it's like, they don't care about us layers.
Yeah, the song First Place sounds really Michael Jackson-y to me. There's like a little Prince moment on the album too. He's really just in his bag with the references. And Dijon is a great producer who has also worked with Bon Iver.
Mm.
And he's on the last Bon Iver Sable Fable. He worked on the song Day One. And also Pink Diamond with Charlie XCX, which is off of How I'm Feeling Now. So like Dijon has been, you know, bubbling around a lot lately. Also, do you know who Mick G is?
Yes, but remind me.
Mick G had an album in 2020 called A Museum of Contradiction, which is sort of like when I first discovered them. But then we got Two Star and the Dream Police last year. And that was really where Mick G started getting a lot of, I guess, attention. But their name is Michael Todd Gordon, and they've been working with people like Omar Apollo and Fred again and Bon Iver as well. So, I mean, it's not shocking to see someone like them pop up on this album, because Bieber's always sort of like collecting people who are, you know, doing like the new thing music, et cetera. It's why he's like listening to like Draco the Ruler, RIP, like on Instagram. And he's hopped on the What the Helly remix with Rob 4-9, which you've probably heard just from people saying like, what the helly?
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yes.
That's how I'm greeted. Yes.
But I don't know. I also kind of loved Bieber in his era when he was working with like Dark Child.
Mm-hmm. But speaking of new eras, Kesha is also back with this album, period. I'm not going to say it's a triumph of an album. Like, it's not like in the short and sweet category of every track is like a banger for me. But I'll say more than half of the tracks are, and it's a thumbs up. And I felt like Pitchfork kind of gave her a raw deal with the 5.1. I would put it in the 6.9 category on this album. And I love the song Red Flag. Again, something that will keep me invested in the career of somebody is if they make sure to be funny. To me, if you're funny in your lyrics, that means you want everybody to have a good time. I'm just instantly won over by that. And I never find her, even at her most kind of like teary-eyed and ballad spewing, to be self-serious. And she is so easy to root for in that way. So I find this album to be quite replayable.
Mm, well, I definitely thought it was funny. I like the jokes.
Yeah. You're like, she should submit a packet, but yeah.
I'm not listening to this album again. I think that I have just realized that later era Kesha is not for me.
Yeah.
You know? And it's there are some songs on here that I really love. I love Boy Crazy.
Oh, great song. Great song. Yes.
Yes. I think it's not even the Dr. Luke of it all from the previous albums either. I just like a more frenetic, upbeat, just sort of trashy vibe from Kesha, you know? And I think that obviously, you know, she was leaning more into ballads as she was going through her legal troubles, and, you know, she was getting more into self-empowerment anthems. And in whatever way that you can get yourself through that shit through your own music, like, more power to you, obviously. But now that we're sort of on this new album and we're on the other side of it, I still feel like so much of the album is just not the Kesha that I'm want to listen to.
It's not as high octane as old Kesha. No, that must be said. Outside of Joyride, which is, of course, like...
That song, too.
Joyride. A wild barrel ride into wherever, yeah.
Joyride and Boy Crazy. Like, I want the party anthems. You know, I went to see Kesha in concert when she opened for Rihanna's Only Girl in the World tour. And we were more excited to see Kesha at the time, you know?
Right, right.
I grew up on Blow and,
and you remain on Blow, I hear. Yes. Yeah.
Listen, your love isn't my only drug, Lewis.
Oh, you've diversified. We love a thick portfolio.
Even a song like that, you know, which has been going crazy on TikTok lately. I don't know. I miss the high octane, Kesha. Yeah, when the BPM is too low on this album for me. I think that's what it is.
Got it.
Because she's not really she sounds good, right? But I wouldn't really call Kesha a vocalist.
No. I love the song Love Forever on this album, though. I must say that, too. And the last major song on the album, Cathedral, is such a flop. I always say, we were talking about this last week with the movies in the top 100 list, ending strong is often the key to like getting the thumbs up or the thumb down. Like where something ends up is, I think, what people often remember. And to end on such a bad ballad is like so unfortunate. I haven't, the last
many albums do though.
Yeah, right. The last time an album ended this poorly was, of course, Love Angel Music Baby, when Long Way to Go with Andre 3000 closed out an album I thought was perfect. And then it was suddenly so bad.
When snow hits the asphalt.
Cold Looks and Bag Talk come. What about English?
Which is crazy because Andre 3000 and Gwen Stefani already have a better song on the album, Bubble Pop Electric.
Oh, gosh. Which you could play right now. That should be a hit right now.
Yeah. Hey, Johnny.
When you gonna get here?
I do want to shout out some other music that came out this week that is fantastic, and that is, one, the new album from Twice, the K-pop group. Mm. This is 4. That's the name of the album. It is so good. Like, listen to that. And also, the album for the Netflix film, K-pop Demon Hunters.
Which is apparently the entire internet's identity now. Like, this thing came and swallowed everyone up.
Yeah. So, we're standing K-pop this week. Also, global girl group Cat's Eye released a really good EP. I love that song, Game Boy.
Does this have Gabriella on it?
Yes.
Okay, that song's like, all right. I've been so mad at Cat's Eye.
First of all, one of them is always injured. So every time you see them perform, it's like 3 to 4 of them instead of the 6.
No, Manon will be just like in Antarctica or something. Like, where is she? Just not there. Yeah.
And I also am upset because I'm definitely too old to be going to see Cat's Eye in concert.
I agree.
So I'm going to have to wait. I'm going to have to wait until I get updates from my bestie, Drew.
Until they start doing matinees.
Or I'll see them at Coachella.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. That is sort of where I go see people like that, or like Olivia Rodrigo whenever she does Coachella in the future, et cetera, or like Billie Eilish, et cetera. You know, like, now that I'm in my mid-30s.
Is that a tear escaping your eye? Okay.
I'm too old to be, you know, first of all, I don't even want to go to a concert when I'm dealing with just adults, okay?
Yeah, right.
Then you have to deal with kids and their parents? Absolutely not.
No, these children discovering, like, party drugs? Absolutely not.
Let me be at Coachella on my mushrooms.
Mm.
Actually, I don't really do mushrooms. No, I don't know why I'm acting
definitely
like
not
a,
my
I don't
vibe.
Know, no. I don't know why I'm acting like a Mario brother.
Yeah, no. Absolutely not.
They don't even make you bigger or give you an extra life.
No.
They're lies.
Especially on a racetrack. I want to go faster right now, and they're doing nothing for me. Why am I chewing this thing?
Yeah. All right. When we're back, keep it. And we are back with our favorite segment of the episode, Keep It. Lewis.
Yes.
What's yours?
Checking in on a familiar debate here at the show, the song of the summer, which has been up and down, and we landed on nothing for the most part. And I just want to say keep it to a few people. Keep It to Man Child by Sabrina Carpenter. It's been fun. We enjoyed it. Moving on. Keep It to Zara Larsson. That name was thrown in my face several times. Enjoy you, girl. Yeah. I love the country of Sweden. I hope to visit sometime. That song
you
is
like
not
the Midnight
it either.
Sun?
Not like that. Not for my not as the name of my season that I'm in. Keep it to all the other contenders we had before. The song of the summer is Bitch in Ibiza by Justine Skye. Do you know this song?
When you responded to my Instagram story, I was like, oh, Lewis is locked in.
You post this song, and first of all, because I know you know this is a fraught conversation. So when you used the phrase song of the summer, I said, I'm going to hold on to the table. I'm going to listen to this fucking song. And you were so right, which, by the way, is so maddening. This rarely happens for Ira. This song, like every song now, because we live in like early Beatles universe, is 2 minutes and 5 seconds or something. And I want it to be 3 minutes longer, but it's got that instant replayability thing. It is just bouncing from the get-go, a naughty song about just being in a club, being in Ibiza, or Ibiza, pardon me, I've never learned that. It's so fun. And like all great dance songs, it also sounds like it could be the debut single of like a fifth place drag race contestant. So,
yes.
I love the attitude of it, the nastiness of it. The only thing I object to, and the lyrics are usually pretty funny. She says she's blacked out on a Limerita. A Limerita? Why are you drinking like someone's aunt on a golf course? You're in Ibiza.
Listen, she's on the plane on the way to Ibiza.
Okay. I'll allow that.
Okay. Yeah. You know, but this song, I noticed it at first because the rapper Cakes to Kill posted about it. He worked on the track with Keto. She is a LA-based songwriter and also someone named Noah Barrison. He posted this song, and I was like, okay, just from the snippet, I was like, this is giving.
Yeah.
And then you watch the Instagram just of like Justine Skye. First of all, an icon.
Yeah.
She's been earning her moment lately, and it's coming. Like I think she popped out with Catronata recently at a set, and she definitely came out, I believe, for Alex Chapman at Ladyland during Pride in New York. So that was fun. I am in love with her. Seeing her prance around on this plane, this jet, for, I guess, not, they haven't really released the video yet, but just like some visuals for Instagram. The song is fun.
Yes.
Like it is. I wish it had come out a week prior or 2 weeks prior for Pride and when we were on Fire Island for the 4th.
I mean, you'll listen to the song, listeners, since you know we're embroiled in this drama, but let me just put you in the mindset of the song. The phrase, just another bitch in Ibiza, is played several times, and then you become another bitch in Ibiza. Like, it's immersive. I don't know how to say this. It's like you're in the theater of it. It's black box.
Have you been?
No.
I've never been to Ibiza either.
I feel like that runs straighter than you'd think.
Yeah.
Like, whereas Mykonos is just straight up, like, Sean Cody videos.
Yeah. Where is the Mamma Mia Island?
Right. Near Greece or something?
That's where I'd like to go.
The waters Crete? Are super blue.
Is it Crete? Is the Minotaur singing?
girl, let me get out of this maze. Said the Minotaur. The Minotaural.
And me when my mom's cooking corn for dinner again.
Oh. Oh my God. So I love corn. I'm from the Midwest, as you are. Some friend of mine's mom said to me once, corn is for pigs and Americans in that order. And I have never forgotten it since.
And where was this bitch from?
I know, Spain.
Oh, wow. They're nasty there.
Corn is delicious. Elote, our south of the border friends, they had it all figured out too.
I do love me some elote.
Mm-hmm. It's at Sweetgreen right now too. Why am I not a brand ambassador of theirs? Can I ask you that?
I don't know, actually. You seem like you would. I would love to get the Vertel bowl.
Oh, yeah. No, I think there was a cat's eye bowl for a second. It was not right. I don't want to say what they were trying.
Were half the ingredients gone whenever you went to get one?
You can maybe get it back in a month. Yeah, that was the point of that salad.
You know, they're supposed to be cooking up a boy group next, and I don't really care about men, but I will care if the men are, like, if we're going to bring back boy groups, we need to be bringing back, like, 98 Degrees. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, when people, like, when boy band members were men
oh, yeah.
instead
Ripped,
of real boys.
And they
when they were
backpacks.
Hot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right,
right. When they were hot. Like, I don't want any Wayfish twinks singing to me.
No, let alone dancing.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of why I can't get into K-pop male groups, because they're twinks.
On the topic of gay pop stars, do we know who this Grant Nosh person is? I've just subscribed to him. I'm following him on Instagram. It's like more athletic Troye Sivan moves.
Well, I'm not going to follow a 22-year-old on Instagram.
Okay.
I'm like, what do you have to say to me? But I'm going to look up his music.
Okay.
And we'll report back next week. If he weren't 22, I would say like he vaguely looks like anyone we would have seen at High Tops 10 years ago.
Right. And by the way, some of them are still there. So stay worried. Ira, what is your keep it?
Well, Lewis, as you know, I only have like two more episodes left.
I know, I'm annoyed.
And I'm thinking about what I'm going to do when I leave.
Yeah, we all are, bitch. Any ideas?
Well, nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. My keep it goes to people discovering Jess Glynn this week and calling her that Jet 2 holiday girl, because obviously Jet 2 is a company in the UK that sells cheap holidays, and Jet 2 holiday, their slogan, nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday, came out, I believe, in 2023 as like just an advertisement for, you know, a holiday promo.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the Jess Glynn song, Hold My Hand. The song has, you know, gotten replay on TikTok lately. And then I believe they even played a Hold My Hand on Love Island recently this season. And people were like, oh my God, it's Jess Glynn. That Jet 2 girl. Listen, bitch.
No. Oh, come. You must go back to 2013 with us.
Okay. That is so nasty. Longtime Keep It listeners will remember the time that I called Jess Glynn the white Joss Stone. Okay. Jess Glynn is always going to give it to you.
Yeah. Rather be. I'm still getting over how much play that song got. I mean, what an amazing song.
Yeah. Do not disrespect my girl like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, listen, I probably am going to go on a Jet 2 holiday.
Yeah.
I love me holidays.
And they love you there, I'm sure. Maybe you can learn Jess a first Glynn. Language, whatever, as opposed to whatever that was.
Jess Glynn. Anyway, that's my keep it.
Okay,
just for
very
people
good.
Disrespecting the girl.
And as opposed to fell in love with the girl. Wait, was the fell in love with the boy was the Joss Stone cover of White Stripes she did that got famous, right? Yes.
Oh,
that was a pretty
God.
Good cover.
Yeah, she did do that cover.
Yeah,
that was a good era of music. Can we bring back those covers?
Yeah. I don't know the last time we got an amazing cover. I wasn't a huge fan of that Frozen cover we got recently from Jade, even though I love Jade.
Like, where's Harry Styles doing Girl Child?
Yes. Or I think Harry Styles should cover, what's that song? What would you do if your son was at home crying all along on the bathroom floor? I think you should do that song. City
From
High.
City High.
Yes, yes. Because he's
crying
hungry?
On the bedroom floor because he's hungry. Yes. Wow. They had that song, and then they had that other. That was the height of like the Black Eyed Peas were around.
Mm-hmm.
We neglected to mention this during the Too Much convo, but the best thing that series has done is bring Fergie back.
The song London Bridge is important to the series. And as you know, it's an important geographical document, London Bridge. You'll learn all about the historical facts surrounding London Bridge. It is the world's dumbest fucking song. But really pops off still.
And Fergie shot a brand new video for the song with Megan Stalter just for the series.
It's pretty cute. It's pretty cute.
Is, yeah. I just hope this means that Fergie is preparing for a Black Eyed Peas comeback. That's all we really want.
Kennedy Center Honors? I mean, like, I know that, like, that got taken by Trump or whatever, but come on, Black Eyed Peas. What they did to music is unforgivable. I mean, they deserve prison, but also good.
Yeah. Anyway, that's our show this week. We're going to tap back in next week with having listened to that gay pop star. And then also, I feel like you have, oh, wait, it's going to drop after I'm gone, but your girl Bonnie McKee is supposed to be releasing a song that may be Song of the Summer.
Oh, Electric, okay. Has
Electric Heaven featuring Chiesa, if you remember her.
Yes. Bonnie McKee also just performed at Precinct, a gay club downtown, and please pray for Bonnie McKee, because the things she
did
saw
she?
There, I feel bad.
She's so sweet.
She's a lovely girl and knows music so well. Yeah.
She made a post where she was like, people should stop being mean to Benson Boone. And then I've commented, well, maybe you should write a song for him, girl.
Ding. Yes.
Yeah.
Listen to Jenny's Got a Boyfriend. Great song.
Thank you to Ari Aster. We will see you next week for more Keep It. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath. Our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. And our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Vertel, and Kendra James.
Our digital team is Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Jarek Centeno. Thank you to David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week.
Our head of production is Matt DeGroat, and our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
And as always, Keep It is filmed in front of a live studio audience.